of 7 or 8 degrees. For Wales and northwest England now, a cloudy and damp start to the morning. There will be a brief lull in the rain with some brighter spells before further rain returns for the afternoon, and some of that could be quite heavy. A lot of cloud around, temperatures 7 or 8 Celsius. In Northern Ireland, expect a few morning gusty showers, these tending to clear with brighter skies for the afternoon, highs of 8 Celsius here. And in Scotland, we'll have still some outbreaks of rain and hill snow gradually working southwards, sunny spells developing, but then snow showers to end the day across the northeast, turning colder with temperatures 3 to 5 Celsius. That's the weather. Jim.
Thank you, Chris. Now on Radio 4, we continue our Book of the Week. Return of a King, The Battle for Afghanistan by William Dalrymple. After the murder of Sir Alexander Burnes by Afghan chieftains, the city of Kabul in Afghanistan is in a state of uproar and the invading army under attack from all directions. Meanwhile, the king, Shah Shuja, is in his palace of Bala Hisar. The reader is Tim Pigott-Smith.
In the Bala Hisar, Shah Shuja, understanding the vital importance of an immediate response before the insurgency gained any more momentum, was increasingly baffled by the failure of Macnaghten to counterattack. His Majesty sent an urgent message, wrote the Shah's biographer Herati. We are currently quite safe in the Bala Hisar fort, but the utmost urgency is security in the city, which must be restored at once, otherwise these turbulent townsmen will never be tamed. Macnaghten's only answer was, why all this hurry? The formidable Lady Sale was appalled. All was confusion and indecision, she wrote. The envoy mounted his horse and rode to the gateway, and then rode back again. By evening, seeing his allies sinking into ever greater despondency, Shah Shuja tried to cheer up the depressed officers by proposing to throw a dinner. The response was glum. How could a dinner be thrown, replied the officers, when they had left their dress uniforms in the cantonment. All over eastern Afghanistan, overnight, every village turned hostile. In Kabul, the siege of the two vital commissariat forts was intensifying, and on the 5th of November, at 5 o'clock in the morning, the commissariat fort was finally abandoned. The enemy then took immediate possession, wrote Lady Sale, depriving us of almost our only means of subsistence. This left just one centre of British supplies intact, the Kala Nishan Khan, commanded by Colin Mackenzie. By the evening, Mackenzie and his men were exhausted after fighting and working for nearly 40 hours without rest. Mackenzie then agreed to make arrangements for a retreat. It was Ramadan, so they planned their escape soon after sunset to coincide with the time that their besiegers would be busy with their iftar dinner. The plan was to avoid all villages and to follow the canal until the cantonment came in sight. All baggage and food supplies were to be abandoned. The shooting started before the column had moved more than half a mile. Mackenzie's party quickly got separated from the Jazailchis who had led the retreat, and he found himself alone and under fire in the midst of the wailing crowd of women and children. Soon after this, he was surrounded. Mackenzie spurred his horse and wheeled round, cutting from right to left. My blows, by God's mercy, parried the greater part of theirs, and I was lucky enough to cut off the hand of my most outrageous assailant. I passed unhurt through two volleys of musketry. The picket pursued, but I soon distanced them, crossing several fields at speed. Eventually, they reached the cantonment. During the night, noted Mackenzie, many stragglers of my party, principally followers, dropped in. Every Afghan of intelligence has confessed that if I had been reinforced by a couple of regiments, we should have remained masters of the city. Inside the besieged cantonment, hunger soon began to set in, and the troops were put on half rations. A week later, the situation was even more dire. Our camp followers have for the past 2 days had nothing to eat except the carcasses of our camels and horses, wrote the paymaster Hugh Johnson in his diary. To add to the misery, the temperature now dropped, and the first snows of winter began to dust the ground. Around the same time, the insurgents began to bombard the cantonment with the cannon they had captured. "The spirits of the army were much depressed," wrote the sepoy Sita Ram. "I saw many Saabs shed tears of vexation, and they blamed their generals and leaders for their humiliation. They say their leaders were too old and virtually useless." Shuja was left alone in his fortress with what was left of the Shah's contingent and the handful of British officers attached to it. On the 15th of November, 1841, British morale received another blow when two ragged figures broke through the ring of besiegers to bring terrible news. Eldred Pottinger and John Horton were apparently the only two survivors of the 750-strong garrison of Charikar, a few miles from Kabul. 5 days later, the rebels' guns were suddenly stilled, and for the next 3 days there were no attacks on the cantonment. Only on the morning of the 23rd did it become clear that the days of quiet had been to allow the rebels to manufacture ammunition and powder. That morning, before dawn, the Kohistanis massed in huge numbers on the heights above the cantonment, digging breastworks and trenches. They then began to bombard the cantonment with their artillery. "They trampled the English soldiers under the hooves of their horses," wrote Mirza Atta, "and shouting, 'Allahu Akbar, God is great,' they charged the English." General Shelton was soon sent out to try to clear the heights. Shelton formed his infantry into two squares at the summit of the hill. The Afghans simply pulled back, allowing the Jezail marksmen to come forward and from behind the cover of stones and rocks fire into the densely packed British ranks while keeping well out of range of British muskets. The British were easy targets. A solid mass of scarlet uniforms standing completely still for hours on end, silhouetted on a ridge. Rank after rank fell where they stood. Then a second party of rebel swordsmen assembled in the hidden gully, ready for a final assault. This time, all the troops broke rank and fled back to the cantonment, pursued by the Afghan cavalry. "All order was at an end," noted George Lawrence, Macnaghten's military secretary. "The scene was so fearful, I can never forget it." It was the turning point in the war. The day had been a catastrophe. Of the 1,100 men who marched out with Shelton in the morning, well over 300 had been killed, while the wounded, who had been left outside, were disemboweled as their wives and children looked on helplessly. That night, worse news still arrived in the cantonment. Welcoming volleys from the city announced the arrival of Akbar Khan, Dost Muhammad's most fiery and militarily effective son. Within a few days, he had transformed the uprising by blockading the cantonment effectively for the first time. The previously somewhat fractured rebel command now united firmly around Akbar Khan and his barracks. Within the cantonment walls, the pressure was now intense, as icy blizzards and hunger brought morale ever lower. Akbar Khan wrote to Macnaghten, asking to see him, and a meeting was arranged. The envoy was now pinning his strategy on the faint hope that a relief force from either Jalalabad, Ghazni, or Kandahar might rescue the demoralized troops in the cantonments. The last messenger to make it through the Khord-Kabul Pass, however, carried the news that Sale was himself hopelessly besieged in Jalalabad. On the 7th of December, after thick snow had blocked the route, it became clear that no help was likely to make it through from Kandahar either. On the morning of the 8th, Macnaghten heard from the last remaining garrison, Ghazni, that they too were besieged. Now, with only 1 day's provisions left, there was no hope. The British commanders then formally declared the British situation untenable. and Macnaghten was ordered to meet with Akbar Khan to see what terms he could get to guarantee the safety of the British during an immediate withdrawal from Afghanistan. The first meeting between the two took place on the icy banks of the Kabul River. After 2 hours, an agreement was reached. The British were to withdraw 3 days later on the 14th of December, and their safety was to be guaranteed in return for weapons, hostages, and money. Shah Shuja would be given the choice of leaving with the British or remaining in Kabul as a private citizen. His biographer, Muhammad Hussein Herati, gives the only surviving account of the Shah's reaction when he heard of the terms which had been offered by Macnaghten. His Majesty was distraught, running hither and thither like liquid mercury, wringing his hands day and night, saying, "Macnaghten has taken leave of his senses. It will be the death of both of us." Snow fell heavily in Kabul during the second week of December, billowing down from the Hindu Kush, instantly turning the dusty grey hills around the city a dazzling white. Yet for Macnaghten, the snow was the least of his worries. The promised food and fodder had only arrived in dribs and drabs, nor was there any sign of the promised carts and baggage animals the English would need to transport their goods back to India. There were also damaging rumours circulating among the rebels that Macnaghten was offering money to anyone who would assassinate Akbar Khan. Hearing this, Akbar Khan decided to set a trap to expose Macnaghten's duplicity and made him a startling new offer. The British could stay in Afghanistan until the spring. If they supported Akbar Khan's bid to gain hold of the real reins of power, according to Mohanlal, secretary to the murdered Alexander Burns, as the envoy has no hope of military aid, he was like a drowning man clutching at straws. Akbar Khan sent a message to Macnaghten to meet him again the following morning to finalize details. Macnaghten decided to head off for his appointment with just his small personal guard. The party dismounted, and horse blankets were spread on a small hillock, which the Afghans pointed out as being free from snow. Then, according to Mirza Atta, the Sardar Akbar shouted at Macnaghten, "You are the minister of a great king, but I consider you a fool, one whose word cannot be relied on. You faithless, cheating trickster, shame on you. My intention was to have you honorably accompanied out of Kabul back to India, but your scheme was to have me assassinated. Now you had better come with me into the city of Kabul." Panicking, Macnaghten tried to escape, like a pigeon fluttering to fly free from the grip of a hawk. Akbar grabbed him, drew his thirsty sword, then tore open the envoy's liver and lopped off his head. Akbar then ordered his body to be dragged through the streets and hung from a meat hook in the bazaar. Even Macnaghten's large blue spectacles were put on display. "All came to see the remains exposed there," remarks Mirza Atta, "and to spit in disgust. If you are faithful and true, people will love you. Deceit will only make people shun and loathe you. As it was, Sardar Muhammad Akbar Khan's fame spread. It was clear to all that those Englishmen who had boasted of their shrewdness in policy and bravery in battle were worth nothing compared to the Sardars of Khurasan."
Return of a King, The Battle for Afghanistan by William Dalrymple was read by Tim Pickett-Smith, abridged by Libby Spurrier and produced by Joanna Green. It's a peer production for BBC Radio 4 and you can hear the final episode tomorrow. BBC Radio 4. Now, the shipping forecast issued by the Met Office on behalf of the Maritime and Coast Guard Agency at 0015, today Friday the 1st of February. There are warnings of gales in Jermyn Bight, Portland, Plymouth, Biscay, Fitzroy, Shannon, Rockall and Malin. The general synopsis at 1800. Low Hebrides 990, expected Denmark 989 by 1800 Friday. Low 250 miles west of Fitzroy 1011, expected Germany 990 by the same time. High Trafalgar 1032, losing its identity by that time. The area forecast for the next 24 hours, Viking north at 0, south at 0, 40s. Westerly 6 or 7 in south 40s until later, otherwise variable 4, becoming northerly 5 to 7. Rain or wintry showers, moderate or good. Cromarty, cyclonic 4 or 5, becoming...